And I'm Josh, and on this episode of Our Taste is Trash,
we review Jake Johnson's new film, Self-Reliance,
discuss Oscar nominations and snubs,
and give a sneak peek of the third annual Trashies.
So remember to rate, review, and follow wherever you listen.
Stick around.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Welcome into another episode of Our Taste is Trash. I'm Josh.
And I'm Jade.
My voice is cracking already. I think I've just been talking all day, Jade. Because it's weird now recording, because usually it's midday where you are and it's like nighttime for me. So I've already like spent the whole day interacting with people, like working a job, like doing all stuff, and I'm like, can't still talking at this point, which is, you know, it's great. But
meanwhile, I almost never talk in a day.
Well, not yet. Soon you'll be talking more.
Yeah, soon I will be. Yeah.
But Jade, you know, this week has been, well, just a cold, rainy week here in Ireland. But I did watch something brand new that I wanted to share with you, Jade.
Weekly Watches.
I don't even know if I know the name of the movie. I've just been calling it the Sydney Sweeney movie.
Oh, because, anyone but you.
I mean, yeah, anyone but you. That's what it is. It's what's funny is I think my TikTok algorithm heard me talk about going to this movie because Danielle really wanted to see it. She bought tickets and I was like, I'll come with you. And I was like, she said the name of the movie. And I was like, what? I haven't even heard of that movie. And like everyone on TikTok is calling it the Sydney Sweeney movie because that's.
But that makes no sense to me because she has two other movies. So it's just like, what do you mean Sydney Sweeney movie? Glenn Powell is the bigger powerhouse in that film to me.
Danny, Jade, I didn't even know his name before this movie.
That's ridiculous. First of all.
I knew his face.
Scream Queens? Are you joking me?
I haven't watched.
Chad Radwell? Motherfucking Radwell?
I haven't watched Scream Queens yet.
Okay, well. also, he's like in Set It Up, where he's an amazing rom-com actor.
He isn't Set It Up. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yes, his like whole chemistry with Zoe Deutsch in that movie is so fucking good. He's also in Maverick. He's also in another film coming up called Hitman. Josh, get on Glenn Powell. Okay.
But anyway, Jade, this comes to us from Will Gluck, which I don't know if you recognize that name as a director, but he brought us Friends with Benefits, if you remember the Mila Kunis, Justin Timberlake film, and also Easy A. So this is in that same vein. Like, honestly, I had zero expectations going into this. It's actually kind of hilarious. Like it's not like an amazing film, but it's a step above the rom-com shit that you get on Netflix for the most part.
I'm glad. I feel like, and it's interesting because I've heard people on TikTok talking about it, how this might be the return of the rom-com to theaters. Because if you noticed, not a lot of rom-coms have been in theaters. Whereas like that used to be like, it was always a rom-com, an action, a regular comedy, and then some sort of like sci-fi or fantasy, you know, like those were always in theaters. And rom-coms, I feel like, barely have made it to theaters anymore.
Well, do we have like Jennifer Lawrence to thank for that? Because she did a rom-com earlier this year. No Hard Feelings. Great movie. Great feel-good film.
That one I would feel, it falls in rom-com, but it's less romantic comedy, right? Because they don't actually raunchy. End up together. It's more like a raunchy comedy with a female lead. Versus this is more of a strict rom-com. So I'm excited. And not only that, but it's based on Shakespeare.
That's what I was going to say. It's based on Much Ado About Nothing, which I was like, and they literally have references and lines in the movie. So they like separate the film into parts based on Shakespeare quotes. So, you know, you're watching a film it's great. Like I was like, this is really smart. Like why fuck up something that already works?
Yes. No, if this is like the new trend, I'm all about it. Please continue to make movies based on Shakespeare. It worked so well in the 2000s. I want to see it back. I want to see rom-coms in theaters again. So yeah, that's exciting.
What about you, Jade? Anything exciting top to your list this week?
I, Well, I watched season 7 of Rick and Morty finally.
Jada, yeah. I've been waiting for this moment because, and I've only watched 2 episodes from the season, and I'm going to be honest, mm-hmm. and maybe, and I haven't given the full season a shot, and I will, because I didn't know it had dropped yet, but I only saw 2 episodes, and I was like, God, and this is sad, not excusing what he did, but I missed Justin Roiland watching those 2 episodes. I missed him.
I had this same argument with myself watching because I have to say the very beginning of the season starts off so rocky. Both the voice actors for the new Rick and Morty, I felt like didn't quite get into the groove yet. Like, I don't feel like they picked up all of the mannerisms that Justin Roiland had when he voiced those characters. And so there were just a few things missing and it felt off. Even though the voices sounded the same, it was the way they spoke that felt so different and the level of performance. And so it just felt off. And even the writing too, because Justin Roiland was also the writer of the show as well. So the first couple episodes, I was like, this feels weird. This doesn't feel like Rick and Morty. Like, it all just feels bizarre. And I feel like they finally picked up their stride by like episode 4 or 5, where I feel like the voice actors felt more comfortable in their roles. I think they started to pick up a little bit more of those little things. And then I think the writing started getting a little bit better too. I felt like they started getting more comfortable with writing these episodes and it felt more like traditional Rick and Morty versus like 1 through 3. So fucking just weird. I was like, what am I watching? I just was not interested. But by the end of the show, I was like, oh, this is great. This is great. Yeah.
Do you think like, the algorithm, the ChatGPT they were using got better at that point?
Probably. I will say the spaghetti episode, amazing. The iced tea episode, golden. Love it.
Jade, I'm literally going to go binge these like right after we get done recording here because I didn't know it dropped.
Just remember, you're going to have to suffer through like 3 episodes that's really bad.
They're short. It's fine. It's Rick and Morty. Yeah, they're short.
Like 20 minutes.
It's totally fine. And you know what? Why the fuck isn't Hulu like advertising the shit out of this? Is that on the front page right now? Because I was just on Hulu the other day.
It is. Well, it's on mine. It gave me, it was my number one recommendation when I logged in, which is Hulu, how I knew to watch it.
Hulu, do better. Do better.
It's well, you know why? It's because you're on the ad version.
That's probably correct. Well, and I'm also in another country, so I'm watching it through a VPN. And
I have had the same account for 15 years. So.
Oh my God. See, Jade, I always switched account every time there was a new deal.
You keep changing yours. Yeah. But listen, I have perfected my fucking algorithms for Hulu and Netflix, which is why I will never get rid of them because they know me so goddamn well. Like Netflix knows everything about me. And it's crazy because I think we talked about this before, but when I go into someone else's Netflix, I realize how personalized my Netflix is. Like sometimes I just like, I look at it and I'm like, are they just giving me everything that's new? Like, is it not personalized for me anymore? And then I go into other people's, so I'm like, oh my God, yes, it is personalized for me because this shit that they're being advertised. I'm like,
Netflix profiles should be on dating profiles. Like you should be able to get a snapshot of someone's Netflix profile. Like what's your top, not your top 10, but like show me what's your top categories. Like I want to know what's being suggested to you.
No,
I want to know who you are.
The top 5 movies and shows that Netflix is recommending to you. I need to know.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Because like I went on my uncle's Netflix when I was there for Christmas and I was like, vastly different profiles. Very different. His was all stand-up comedy and action films. And I was like, yep.
Jade, you know what's funny? I was going to say World War II documentaries and stand-up comics. That was going to be my 2 guesses.
Close. Yeah. It's like raunchy comedies, stand-up comedy, action films, and then like probably like anything to do with cars.
Oh, God. Yeah. That sounds horrible. No.
But it's personalized for him.
Not for
him. I was like, ooh. Same with if you switch to my aunt's profile and then it's just straight rom-coms the whole way down. And I'm like, yep. Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. Well, Jade, should we talk about the Oscars? Because the nominations just dropped about a week or so ago-ish. I don't know. I'm losing all track of fucking time. So I don't know what day it is anymore.
Couple days ago or last week, yeah.
I feel like it was last week that they dropped.
Last week, yeah.
But I mean, let's just, before we get into any of the nominations, let's just talk about the most egregious thing that's happened in these nominations. Greta Gerwig got snubbed. There is no directing nomination for Greta Gerwig. In fact, there are no women in the best director category, which I think is a huge miss for the Oscars.
100%. I mean, as we know, that there's only been one female director who has ever won an Oscar. And that was all the way in what? That was like the mid 2000s, Hurt Locker.
Yeah, that would have been like 2000. Is it 10-ish? Somewhere in there?
I think it was like in high school. So yeah. But it's just crazy because, you know, we saw in the Globes, we had two female directors nominated, Greta Gerwig and Celine Song, who did Past Lives. And the fact that neither one of them has made it into Best Director, like, is wild to me. Not to say that someone like Jonathan Glazer, who's Zone of Interest, and Justin Triet for Anatomy of a Fall are not great. But I mean, come on, Greta Gerwig, I think, deserves some flowers here. I mean, it was a box office phenom.
Jade, I do have some updates on the claim, because I thought Catherine Bigelow was the only one as well who won a best best director. There's
been one more.
There's been three, if you can believe this. And so here we go. So we have Catherine Bigelow, who won in 2010. She won in 2010 for Hurt Locker.
Yeah, there we go.
She was the first ever director.
That's
yes.
what it was.
Yeah, okay. Which because I remember her. That was a big deal. I remember watching her speech when she won that award. That was insane.
Yeah.
I'm going to get this wrong. Chloe Zhao for Nomadland. Nomadland in 2021. And then, I'm sorry. That would have been in 2021, I think. Or
Nomadland?
No.
That was like 2019, right?
2019. Yeah, I think you're right. Something like that. Mm. So then, 2021. Sorry, that's what I'm reading. I can't read. The third one was Jane, is it Campion for Power of the Dog?
Yeah.
I forgot she won. She won. I didn't remember that.
Me,
I didn't remember her
either.
Winning. So, yeah, so there's been three there, which all for pretty solid movies, I will say. But, I mean, it's crazy. Like, the amount of not just female directors, but directors who have directed billion-dollar movies. And I know that doesn't mean you're going to win a directing nomination.
Right.
But I mean, that's a huge trailblazing achievement to be a female director that's been I'm fairly certain on this next statement, the only female director to direct a billion-dollar Hollywood movie.
I believe so, because I believe it was mentioned at either the Globes or the SAG Awards or something like that, the Critics' Choice or something,
Just looking at the now, let's dive into that category, because I mean, when you look at that category, looking at who's nominated, you have, of course, your, I feel like, evergreens in this category. You have Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon. I feel like there's always someone in the Christopher Nolan echelon that gets directed every year for Oppenheimer, who's probably honestly going to win. Like, Christopher Nolan, people love Oppenheimer for some reason.
He's probably going to win. Yeah, it's probably going to be Christopher Nolan. Or Yorgos Lanthimos.
You have Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest, which I keep hearing about, but again, haven't seen yet. You have
Yorgos Lanthimos, yeah.
For Poor Things, which I think is probably the second contender.
Yeah.
You do have one female in this category, which is Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. But yeah. I mean, that's it. There's no one exciting in this list for the movies that are listed. Like, to me, the only choices here are Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer or, you know, Yorgos for Poor Things.
Yeah. I have a feeling that's pretty much the way it's going to go. I'm not surprised. Just kind of.
Just not excited. Just not excited, right? Like,
yeah, because it's just, you're basically seeing the same people over and over again. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of thing of like, look, do we know that they can do an incredible job? Absolutely. But do we think that this is their best work ever, or that there's not someone who maybe was a little bit better this year? Yeah.
And this is where I have a problem with the Academy, because, like, look, Martin Scorsese is a great director. Like, no one's arguing that. But like, mm-hmm. is Killer of the Flower Moon, like, I've watched clips. I haven't watched the whole thing yet because I haven't wanted to commit 3 hours to watching this fucking movie. But like,
yeah,
look, I, based on what I've heard other respected people that I know review and talk about this, I don't think it's award worthy. Like, I would be absolutely shocked if he won for this. And I mean, why not give that spot? Why not give that spotlight to mm-hmm. another up and coming director who is out there doing some trailblazing shit? You
exactly.
know?
I know. I yeah, it's just, this is what the Academy does, you yeah. know?
Well, it's and that's because I think someone said it best, like, most of these categories are full of old white men, you know?
Yes.
Because you have to be a member of the Academy. And in some mm-hmm. of these cases, like in the directing category, you have to be, I believe, like in, not in the guild, but in that division of the Academy. You have to be in
Yeah, like
that...
you have to be a director yourself, right?
Yeah. Because, well, I think in the Academy, right, like, aren't there like specific, like for membership, aren't there specific categories like for actors and directors and things like something like
so,
that?
So, yeah.
I don't know. I'm totally making this up.
I'm thinking of SAG. I don't know.
Maybe
but regardless. Yeah. I don't know. Can't remember. But regardless, obviously, that was just a huge snub.
Yeah, 100%. You know, some people have argued, Jade, you know, looking at the best actress category, that mm-hmm. Margot Robbie was snubbed. And I don't think that she was.
I agree. I think that's the one that I just, when people kept talking about it, I was like, look, is Margot Robbie an incredible actress? Yes. Was this her Oscar-worthy moment? No, I don't think so. I think she did a great job acting in Barbie, but I don't think that that was necessarily worthy of an Oscar. And I mean that in the way that, like, look, like, not to say that playing a certain type of character shouldn't allow you to be, like, you know, like, I feel like people always feel like you have to play this very serious character all the time to get an Oscar, or like very like kind of, even in comedies, like, that are nominated for Oscars are usually some sort of like dramatic element to them. But I just, to me, I don't know, not the best performance for her.
Well, and here's what I would argue. I think that Margot Robbie got nominated in the category she wanted to, because she was also mm-hmm. the producer on Barbie, and yeah. Barbie did get a Best Picture nomination. That's where the producers get their awards. And yeah. also, she was also playing producer on Saltburn at the same time. And I think that Margot Robbie wants yep. to get much more into, I think she...
Well, she has her own production company.
Exactly. I think she wants yeah. to get into the creating of films business. Yeah. I think she wants to be recognized as a film producer and filmmaker. Yeah. Exactly. And I think she's gotten a lot of recognition for Saltburn. And I think she's getting the recognition she deserves on the side yeah. of the house that she wants to get recognition.
And you know what? I think for Margot, I think number one, she has the chops to get an Oscar, yes. but I think she also understands that, and most actors I think understand, there are very specific films that you do essentially to get an Oscar. They're mm-hmm. Oscar bait films. We all know them.
The Revenant. Yeah.
Poor things. But like, and I think she knows that, and she has those opportunities, I'm sure. But yes. I think she's in a position where she acts in what she wants to act in.
1,000%.
I think yeah. she knows, like, when yeah. she takes on roles, like, this is not an award winning role, but it's a role that I want to play. And I think she's okay with that. And I agree with you. Like, I think she's more in the vein of becoming an award winning filmmaker rather than an award winning actress, even though, like I said, I think she has the chops to do it.
Yeah. And I think that's what 2022 was for her. I mean, when you look at her doing Babylon yep. and Amsterdam, and I just don't think those movies hit correctly. And I don't think no. that was her fault. But I think that was her attempt to do an Oscar film, and it just didn't work out for her.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that this year has been very much about her producing. It's been about yep. Barbie. It's been about Saltburn. And I think she has another movie coming out pretty soon next year that also she produced as well.
I think so too, yeah.
But let's, Jade, I can't talk anymore, Jade. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Let's dive in, Jade, to a couple more categories here. And Best yeah. Picture for me is one of those. And you know, what jumps out to me about Best Picture, and I'll name them here in a second, is that I think you and I were so excited last year to mm-hmm. talk about the Oscars because we had seen like 80% of the movies, at least yeah. in the popular categories. We were like, oh, we've seen all of those. Like, this is great. Yeah. This is amazing. Like, this is a great Oscars because most everyday people have actually seen the movies in these categories. I've seen like 3 movies in his categories. In fact, half of the movies in his categories, I've barely heard about.
Well, not only that, but I feel like last year's Oscars were all films that still felt like they were for everyone, you know, most people who are watching, you know, it was still entertaining. Like, I feel like normal audiences would still go to watch those films versus this year's Oscars all feel like very much Oscar baity films. Like,
they are
all independent. They all came out right at the end of the year, like essentially just in time for awards season. Like, these are not household names for films. You know,
I think there's really only three movies on this list that people have heard about, that most people, if you're asking, Oppenheimer, Barbie, and Killers of the Flower Moon. Yeah, that's it. Like, I think you could, depending on what your level of interest in cinema is, you've probably heard of a few more. But I mean, I'll just name off. So there's what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 movies nominated. Mm-hmm. I've barely heard, I'm starting from the bottom, The Zone of Interest. I don't even know what that movie's about.
I think, is that one a foreign film too?
It might be. It looks like it might be a German. It's an A24 film as well, Jade, apparently, which I didn't know. It's from Cannes. Mm-hmm. Looks interesting. I'm sure it'll be good. Jade, it doesn't even release for theatrical release until February of this year. It hasn't even gone out yet.
That makes sense. See, exactly. Yeah. It's a German film. So it's a period drama. That checks out. Then we have The Holdovers, which
has gotten... I hadn't even heard of that before The Globes came out. Like, I knew Paul Giamatti was in something and someone was like, oh, he's done really great.
Yes.
Here it is.
Well, I don't even know if it had a theatrical release, to be honest. And
it was limited. It was limited.
Streaming now on Peacock, which is great. I plan on watching it. But again, this was one that was just like, where the fuck did this movie come from?
Yeah. No, exactly. Four things I'm excited about. I actually do want to see this movie. I knew about this movie for most of the year, and I feel like it got pushed back. Like,
I did, because you and I talked about it on the podcast before, and because we were like, oh, we'll probably plan on watching this, and then all of a sudden it got pushed because of the strike, so I didn't even know when it was coming out.
It, like, just started coming out in theaters around here, like, after the Globes. And I was like, oh, yeah. I guess it's in theaters now, you know?
Same.
I'm interested to see that. I think it'll be interesting. Past Lives is another one that I just haven't got around to watching. Like, I feel like it's popped up on everyone's... It's on a streaming platform somewhere.
It's on Paramount Plus, and I plan on watching this as well. Past Lives I had known about earlier in the year, and I know I've been wanting to watch it. But again, it was one that got pushed, so... It just was like, I didn't even know when or if it was coming out. So I feel like, again, no one had a chance to watch it.
No. You have Oppenheimer and Barbie here, which I don't think we need to talk about that all that much. Mm-hmm. Maestro, I've watched a good half of this movie, Jade, and it's an interesting introspective into this person's life.
But I have literally watched videos of people who have actually read and studied, like, Leonard Bernstein.
I think this one's name is. Yeah.
Leonard Bernstein, like, his life and followed his career. And those people are like, this is not what this movie is about at all. Like, he missed the mark supposedly on a lot of things, but it's weird because he got the permission from the family and the family approved the film. And a lot of people were saying that the film focused primarily on his relationship with his wife. And I think that's why they approved it, is because his wife was, like, more interested in a film about their relationship than a film about him and his life and his career, which is interesting.
I don't know how to describe it. It was like watching Asteroid City, like, honestly, like that. It was just kind of like, what's happening?
This is Bradley Cooper's attempt at trying to get an Oscar.
That's exactly what it is. And it's just, I'm sorry. Like, I'm finally at an age where I can just say I'm fucking bored. Like, this is, I understand that it's interesting what you're doing. I understand that, you know, this is very artistic and I can appreciate some of the things done, but I'm just overall fucking bored.
Someone said you should watch Tar instead.
Good God. That's saying something. That's saying something.
Right?
Killers of the Flower Moon, we know what that's going to be. Martin Scorsese doing a 3-hour fucking movie on something. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be great. Like,
it's based on a book.
It's based on a book. And then we have Anatomy of a Fall and American Fiction, which again are two kind of latecomers. I'm interested in watching American Fiction. I've heard a little bit about this movie.
I've been wanting to see American Fiction.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds so good. And I love, was it Jeffrey Wright, I believe, is the main actor in that. So I'm excited for this. Yeah.
No, I'm excited. I mean, like, I'll probably eventually get around to watching most of these films, but just the fact that I haven't already just makes me think, like, God, some of these movies I already know are going to be a slog fest to get through. And, you know, it just tells me too that these are all very artistic movies. And while that is kind of in my wheelhouse, like, sometimes it's just a labor to have to sit down and watch a 2-hour movie that you have to think about after a fucking long day. And that just 100% means that, like, people are going to watch these Oscars and be frustrated because no one's seen most of the movies that people are going to win for.
These fucking movies.
No. Yeah. No. Yeah. The other thing we're going to be talking about, I'm just going to skip over this category because we, out of the best performer and actors, it's probably going to be Cillian Murphy. Like, I'm looking here at all, you know,
I have him as my top contender.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. Cause you have Bradley Cooper, not going to win for Maestro. No, you have Colman Domingo for Rustin, another fucking movie no one's seen. You have Jeffrey Wright, you already mentioned for American Fiction, which I think is gonna be great. And, you know, I think the dark horse here is probably Paul Giamatti. Yeah.
Same. Because he already won the Globe. And that's what I have. I have Cillian Murphy and Paul Giamatti as my top people because I feel like Paul Giamatti obviously gave a great performance since he already won the Globe, but I feel like it most likely will go to Cillian Murphy.
And I also think that this is Emma Stone's year again. I think Emma Stone's going to win an Oscar for Poor Things. Cause I mean, I have
her and Lily Gladstone being the top.
Lily Gladstone would be great. I would love to see that.
She would be the first Indigenous woman to win lead actress.
I think that would be amazing. But I mean, you have Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. You have Carey Mulligan for Maestro, which, look, I love Carey Mulligan. I just don't think this is a movie she's winning an Oscar for.
No.
And then you have another fucking movie. Annette Bening for Naiad. Another movie no one fucking saw.
Well, that came out on Netflix.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, if you were to have a conversation with someone of just moderate, like, interest in cinema and name off 5 of these movies that we've talked about, they would go, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
What is that? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like another interesting. Oh, you know what? Keep me in the Barbie realm. These next two categories I think are kind of interesting because out of all of the actors who were nominated for Barbie, I think the two that had the best performances got nominated.
Which makes sense to me.
Ryan Gosling for Barbie. I mean, listen, I mean, you can argue, I think, about the themes and what people took away from Barbie, but I think Ryan Gosling embodied the role.
An incredible performance.
Incredible. Like,
I know friends like, oh, them not nominating Margot and them nominating Ryan, like, was the whole point of Barbie. And I'm like, that's no, actually, it wasn't.
He is Ken. Like, to the fact where, like, people now, and it's shocking because, I mean, you and I have known Ryan Gosling through his entire career. Like, I could name a million movies that he's been in that I think of him as that role. Mm-hmm. But there is now a whole new audience that only thinks of Ryan Gosling as Ken. This is his, like, Jack Sparrow. Like,
oh, yeah. Because even though people love Margot as Barbie, they're not going to look at Margot in other films and think of Barbie. But they're going to look at Ryan Gosling in other films and think of Ken.
Moving forward, 100%. I think now if he wants to get back to his indie stuff that he loves to do, I think for certain audiences it's going to be hard to see him in something else.
Especially young audiences.
Yes.
You know, because if you think about us, like my time, you know, he was Noah for a long time because The Notebook.
Oh, yeah. The Notebook. Yeah.
Right. But like,
that almost seems like a different person. Doesn't it seem like a different time and a different person?
I watched that over Christmas and I was like,
who is that guy? I think of him from like Crazy Stupid Love. Like that is one of the roles that sticks in my mind.
My peak Ryan Gosling is actually the movie Murder by Numbers.
Oh, God.
Sandra Bullock.
I forgot he was in that movie. Like
where he's the killer.
Yeah. Oh, wild.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who wears a thumb ring? I think about that a lot, actually. Anyways, moving on.
I think I think this is another one. I think Mark Ruffalo could win an Oscar for Poor Things.
Yes. I have for my top, I have Mark Ruffalo and then RDJ. So
For Oppenheimer.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. It would be the only one, but truly I think Mark is going to sweep it. Looking at everyone else in this category, even though I haven't seen the film, I feel like he most likely has the most standout performance. Because as much as I love Ryan Gosling, and I think he deserves the nom, I don't think he deserves the Oscar. I would be very surprised if he won.
Yeah,
I would be I'd mad be if he won, but I would just be surprised. Yeah.
Here's a category that I think could be just open. Like I don't have a bead here. One, because I haven't seen half the movies. But yeah. Two, I'm just looking at what I've heard. I'm looking at the names and kind of going off of what I've heard of some of these movies. But I mean, you have, again, Barbie, America Ferrera. I was like, I remember without even looking at the list, I was like, if America Ferrera is not nominated in Ryan Gosling, it's going to be a travesty. Because everyone started talking about Ryan. And I was like, I remember looking at the list and I was like, oh, America Ferrera. Perfect. She deserves to be nominated for her role in Barbie. Because it was that, just for that monologue alone at the end of the movie. Right.
Thank you. Because she had a more significant, I think, role in Barbie, weirdly, than Barbie did. Because she is essentially the audience, you know, and that's who the audience related to the most, rather than Barbie's journey. It was more of America Ferrera's character, Gloria's journey. So I agree with that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I would love to see her win, but I mean, you also have Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple. You have Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer. You have Jodie Foster for Naiad. Again, I don't know who the fuck is in Naiad or what that movie's even about. And then you have...
I think it's based on a true story about a woman who swam like the English Channel or something.
Jesus Christ. Then, okay, cross that one off. those movies never win anything. Like, they just don't. They're not... It's like...
I know. Yeah. They got the nomination, but I don't think they're going to win. I think this is honestly... It might be Divine Joy Randolph for the holdovers because she won the Globe. But my only other contender would be America Ferrera. And if it's not her, maybe Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
But I don't think Emily Blunt had a large enough role in Oppenheimer to, I don't know, to take it.
I could, yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Mm-hmm. I could see, because I mean, how much time did women in those movies even have?
Not a lot.
It's a Christopher Nolan.
I have a 3-hour long film, 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Jade, I just want to hit one more because we're running a little heavy here and we could talk about these all day, but best animated feature film.
Yes.
Okay. So we have a couple here that I haven't seen. We have Robot Dreams. Mm-hmm. We have Nimona, which I haven't seen. And The Boy and the Heron, which as we know, took home the Globe. But then we have, I think, our favorite, Elemental, got a nom, which I think is
Elemental
great.
Elemental was really good.
It was vastly underrated. Vastly underrated.
That's the problem is the marketing, because they marketed that almost as a rom-com for Pixar.
Dumb idea.
It was like, what happens when fire falls in love with water? And you're like, okay. But then it's actually this whole story about like generational trauma and like
immigration.
What it means to be. Like immigration. Yeah. Yeah, it's like immigration. Like, anyways,
racism, like it's about all three. Yeah, it's wild.
So many other themes that I was like, I don't think anyone knew what it was about.
No, I don't.
Honestly, and then, of course, our favorite, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
This better fucking win.
Thank you. Because look, I'm sure The Boy and the Heron is absolutely fantastic. It won the Globe. It's an anime. It looks like it's really good. Everyone that I know that have watched it has said that it's amazing. But I'm sorry, but Across the Spider-Verse, we talked about it before, and I will keep talking about how, first of all, it was still the best film of 2023 for me, personally. Secondly, I think it's even better than the first film, and the first film won an Oscar. So to me, I just feel like it's natural for the sequel to win an Oscar.
Yeah.
But I will say, in this category, the fact that Nimona is nominated for an Oscar is fantastic. This was a film, by the way, that I believe was originally started in an animation studio that was owned by Disney. And then I believe Disney dropped it and then got picked up by another production company and then sold to Netflix. And this film ended up being so amazing. Like first of all, the animation style is incredible.
I did watch Nimona.
It was okay. With like a shape shifting girl, like
I might have less of an opinion on this. It was okay. Like it wasn't great. It was just, it was a good movie.
Well, I think what makes it so great is it's a way for kids to kind of understand like gender identity and like sexual identity in a way that doesn't talk about it explicitly, but like, The whole point is Nimona, you know how she's a shapeshifter? There's a conversation that she has where he asks her like, oh, are you a girl or are you like this monster? And she's like, why do I have to be either?
Yes.
And it's that idea of being like, she's like non-binary. And then obviously the knight, I forget his name, but like he's gay in the show. And it's just one of those things where, I don't know, I just feel like it speaks on that subject really well. And also, again, like I just love the animation style and it was really cute. I don't think it's Oscar worthy, sorry to Nimona, but
well, when you compare it to the other movies in this category.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I just, yeah. But the fact that it got a nom is really cool.
Movie review. First look.
What did we watch this week, Jade? I've almost forgotten all this time.
Self-reliance.
Self-reliance. Jade, first thoughts on this movie?
It was like good, but also just not what I expected. And then I think I was just a little bit disappointed because I had a specific idea of what this movie was going to be. And then it wasn't. And I don't know if that's just on me for putting that expectation on it, but
wow, Jay,
I don't know.
We might have very differing opinions about this because I was honestly really? In the opposite side of the spectrum. I had lower expectations of this movie. And wow. I think it was just because it was Jake Johnson. And I was like, even though I like him and I like some of his work, I've seen some of his produced stuff. And I was like, I don't know if this is going to be great. Like it might be good in an indie sense. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this film. Like it was so much more tragic and funny than okay. I anticipated it being. Like I felt like there were so many themes in this movie about loss. And I was like, if someone could embody what it's like to have a midlife crisis as a millennial, this is what it is. It's not buying sports cars. It's not like doing anything else.
Yeah,
it's like just trying to grasp your sense of self. And like, this felt like to me, maturing of Jake Johnson as a filmmaker. And I really enjoyed this and I took a ton of notes. I think the writing was really funny because in movies like this, especially I always feel like in indie movies, you know how like larger budget films have a beat to them. You know, there's not a lot of gaps. There's not a lot of space. And sometimes in indie movies, there's just that awkward space or that awkward silence. Sometimes it's not filled. And I feel like there wasn't a lot of that, even though obviously, this movie probably wasn't made for more than like $5 million, you know, something like that, which is very low budget.
Yeah.
I was entertained. I love this movie. I can't wait to get more into it. So we're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about our movie this week. It's Self-Reliance. It's streaming now on Hulu.
Our feature presentation.
Hi.
Are you the actor Andy Samberg?
I am.
I'm a big fan, man.
Thank you very much. Hey, I got a question for you. You want to get in?
Thomas Walcott, single, no children, no dependents. Job is network management, physically fit. Guess they're not too strict about that one.
I'm joking. Kind of serious, though.
You have been selected to partake in the biggest reality show in the dark web. There will be people trying to kill you, the Hunters.
What are you talking about? There's people trying to murder me?
Oh, shit.
Very much so.
Our movie this week is Self-Reliance. It's streaming now on Hulu. It's written and directed by Jake Johnson and has a pretty fantastic cast for a movie of this size. You have Andy Samberg as himself, which is just, I think, fantastic. You have, of course, Jake Johnson as Tommy. And you have Anna Kendrick, who I believe is in, this has to be like three or four movies with Jake Johnson, something like that. Because she was in like Beer Buddies. She was in Dig. Yeah. And I feel like there was one or two other ones they've done together in the past.
Maybe it was like Ride the Eagle. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. One of those. You also, which I haven't seen this guy in forever, Christopher Lloyd. It makes a small appearance in this. You have Emily Hampshire as Mary from Schitt's Creek, who's in this as well. I was also surprised to see her. I was like, wait, I recognize her. Who is? I feel like Jake Johnson just called up a bunch of people in Hollywood that he knew or had friends of friends and were like, hey, I'm doing this movie. You guys want to be in it? And they were like, I got a month free.
Yeah, because we also get like Natalie Morales, Eduardo Franco, who like I love. We also have Gata. I love Gata. He's from Gata. Dave. Obsessed with him. He plays Charlie, the guy that like answers his Craigslist ad. That's also, Gata.
Also, we have Wayne Brady.
Wayne Brady.
That shows up in this
randomly
for like 3 minutes. Yeah, it's, I mean, really, I don't think there's anyone in this film that I was like, oh, I haven't recognized. Like pretty much everyone in any role, I was like, oh, I've seen them on this, or they were an actor in this show or movie kind of a thing. It's, I don't know. Yeah. It was weird and kind of funny. Well, Jade, let's just jump right in. I think we're going to start with, I want to start with the positive on this film. What was treasured for you about this movie?
I think just like some of the storyline in general, the setup of it, I thought was done really well. This kind of concept of, you know, this man is offered $1 million if he can survive 30 days of being hunted. But the one loophole is that he has to, like, he can't be hunted if he's like within proximity of another person. And I think it created a lot of these like really funny setups of like him trying to, you know, like, first of all, he like tries to recruit his family, but really early on, like with his brother-in-law is like, hey man, like, it's not going to work if I'm taking a shit and you're in the bathroom with me, you know? And then I loved, this concept too of that, like, because that's the loophole, also that means people don't witness him being hunted. So like no one believes him. They all think he's crazy. And I think that was just such a fun, clever, funny thing, especially because the crux of the film is kind of him overcoming his own like personal battles with different things. And I really love that that was like the through line. You know, this wasn't just a straight film of The Most Dangerous Game, essentially. Like this was more of a film about like a man's struggle with his kind of identity and who he is and where he's going in life and like what his purpose is, yada, yada, yada. Like, I think that was done, you know, that was done fairly well.
I think it was great. Like I talked about this a little bit before the break, but I mean, for me, those themes in the movie, I think really spoke to me. I think if you're of the millennial generation, this movie is relatable in at least one aspect. I mean, at its core, this movie is about a man who is stuck in his ways. And I think overall stuck in life. Like everyone sees it around him. He even sees it to some degree that he's just kind of going through the motions. He's not over his ex. He hasn't moved out of his parents' home. He did at one point, but now he's back at his mom's house. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just not progressing at all. He kind of has the same job that he's had for years that he is fine with, you know, and doesn't quite know what to do with himself. And, you know, seems to always have, I mean, I don't know. I think anyone can relate to this on some level with struggles with your family. But I mean, he's just like, seems to be the guy that always comes up with these ideas, a little bit black sheep, and is, you know, always telling his family something elaborate or some new scheme that he has. And they're all like, yeah, great. I'm sure this is going to be the one that really, really takes you to the next. Yeah, really works out for you. Great. You do that, buddy. You do that thing. And so, like, I think in essence, I love the theming of this film. That's one of the things that I really enjoy about this movie, because I think Jake Johnson captures this feeling of both being stuck in a routine, being stuck in your life and not knowing how to get out of it, but also really talks about the theme of loneliness, that even though you have all these people around you, you have your family around, you have certain friends all around, that you also can still feel just so alone.
Yeah,
at times. Absolutely. And so those are the things that I really enjoyed about this film. And also I found the overall, and I'm going to get into these in quotes, but like some of the situations and some of the pop culture references and just some of the dialogue in this movie, I think this is far and above some of the other films that I've seen Jake Johnson in or some of the movies that I've seen him produce. Like I think the writing and the dialogue was really smart and really funny.
Interesting. I didn't find most things quotable. I wasn't really interested in a lot.
I have so many quotes. I'm going to dominate that.
I think I have like three quotes.
That's shocking, Jade. Shocking.
I know.
I guess then, Jade, we should dive right into what was trash about this film.
I'm probably going to dominate this right now because this to me felt like it needed to go further. Okay. This film felt very middle of the road. I felt like he either needed to make a decision to go further in one direction or the other. So for me personally, what I wanted was I wanted full on action. Like, I'm telling you, I wrote down, first of all, 45 minutes into the fucking movie, and there was like not even a scene of action or conflict. 45 minutes into the film. And literally, it's just you watching him constantly trying to fucking be around another person, but yet there's like no one actually attacking him. Like, the first sign of a hunter is like a man outside of his window for like 2 seconds, and that's it. And I'm like, okay. And then an hour into the film, still nothing has happened. Like, at that point, like, he still barely has even gotten over any of his shit. Like, I think he had just confronted his ex, but then this is like an hour in is like the scene where he's with his father in the limo. And I'm still kind of like, where are we going? What are we doing at this point? Like, what I wanted to see was a constant barrage of him trying to get away from hunters. Like, I wanted him actually to be hunted and attacked and him fighting them off and then constantly trying to find someone to be around and like find that type of like struggle. But we didn't get that. So then, okay, that's fine. But pardon me. Okay. So then the whole time this film is trying to show you, is this all in his head or is this real? And for me, I wanted it to either be real, which is why he's being attacked all the time, and that everyone still doesn't believe him because he can't be attacked around another person, which would have added to the comedy more, I think, would have made it funnier. There would have been more to watch. There would have been more action, a little bit more conflict. Or he should have gone further in the other direction and really made it so that we are really questioning him and wondering, is this even real? And then you find out in the end that it wasn't, but this was all part of his process to kind of get through whatever it is that he's getting through. And it was neither one of those things for me.
And that was the trash that I wrote down. I was a little disappointed in the ending because I was convinced at a certain point, and probably as we got towards the 1 hour mark, 1 hour 15 mark, that this movie was going to be him having a psychotic break. Because one of the things that I was writing down that I was like, oh, these are the clues that they're dropping, is pretty much every single one of the attackers harkened back or were a reference to something in his life. And I was like, oh, he is just reliving childhood trauma, and this is him manifesting it in a hallucinogenic way that, you know, this is how he's dealing with it. This is how he's processing it. And at the end, we're going to see him have a complete break, and it's either he's going to be committed or die, or, you know, something tragic is going to happen to him, or he's going to get past it, push past that. So I thought this was going to go much, much darker. And I was actually hoping that it went down that route. And I guess I kind of get that they wanted to end on a lighthearted note, but I agree that is the one trash I had, is that the ending for me was not it, because I almost wanted it to be a little bit darker and to really explore the themes that they had set up. And instead, I think they just went for, I'm not going to say an easy out, but just kind of a, we want to make this funny at the end and we want to make it lighthearted. You know?
Still felt like a half-assed out because he wins the game. And you still question it, like, right? Like, you still question, like, did he actually win? Or is this still part of, like, a manifestation? Because even when he tells his family how he won, he's like, oh, so I get paid in installments of, like, $4,000 a month. And it's in Greenlandic currency.
It's in, like, Danish krona because it's green.
Yeah, currency. It's, like, Greenlandic. Yeah. And so they're like, okay, it doesn't sound great. But the only thing that is making the audience believe that is real is because he's there with Wayne Brady. And there was a mention earlier when he was in the limo with his dad, because his dad was like, Wayne Brady got me from the airport. And so all of a sudden Wayne Brady's there with him. But that's the thing, is I'm like, it would be so easy to prove if any one of them called his fucking dad. You know what I mean?
That's the thing that threw me off. They made a point saying that no one had seen their dad in like 30 fucking years.
Yes.
And then he just shows up and I was like, this is a manifestation. This is absolutely.
That's why.
They never explained it again. That made me feel like. They never explained it again. That was the point that bothered me. I was like, why don't they revisit this?
Yeah. If I was his mom, I would have immediately contact, if I had any sort of contact, I would have contacted his dad, found him, and been like, I know we haven't spoken in this long or whatever, but I think your son is having a fucking psychotic break because this is what he told me. And then his dad would have either confirmed or denied, but we never got that. Yes. So that's why it was, the whole thing was just a little, I was like, again, they needed to pick one direction. And I don't think he went further or far enough in that one direction for this movie to really hit the way that I wanted it to hit. Also, I just feel like, to me, I don't feel like I got enough of a resolution from the character because I don't think he actually learned as much as we thought he was going to learn, right? Like, yes, he overcame the issues he had with his ex, but the whole conversation he had with his ex, Teresa, was she said that he was stuck, that he wasn't moving anywhere, wasn't going anywhere. So that's still a problem. Him not being over his ex is not the only problem that he has. So him getting over his ex, that's great. But yet we never actually see him move on because it's not like he gets another job. Yeah, he moves out of the house, his mom's house, but that could have been something that still would have happened inevitably. Like, because the only reason he lives with his mom is because he was living with his girlfriend and they broke up and he moved back home. You know what I mean? Like, who's to say when he would have eventually moved out? And, So he moves out. That's great. But like, it's not like he gets a new job. It's not like, he makes a new friend, Walter, but how real is that friendship? Like, I'm sure they're really friends, but
I kind of wonder that, like, did he drop his ass like as soon as this was over and be like, well, thanks. You're a homeless guy. See you later.
Yes. And also it's weird because I'm like, okay, because the Walter thing, how is he really a friend? If remember during the game, he was like, where's Walter? And they were like, oh, we gave him a hotel room for like the next three nights or whatever, so you wouldn't be with him. And I'm like, well, if Walter was really his friend and knew the whole thing was he couldn't be alone, why would Walter choose a hotel room over him knowing that he could die? You know what I mean?
I also think, I would. Oh, 100%. But I think Walter knew this was kind of transactional. I think he's smart enough to understand that, you know?
Right. But that's what I'm saying. So in the end, it's like he didn't actually gain a real friend.
Also, Jade, when that choice in the movie, I was like, this is absolutely something I would think of in this situation where I'd be like, you homeless guy, I'll pay you $100 a day to stay next to me all of the time. And you
know what's funny is before that scene even happened, that was my first thought.
Jake Johnson like understands this. He's like, I know the people that are watching my movie and this is what I should do. Yeah.
We're all a little bit, you know, off our rocker in that way. Yeah. 100%.
Because I mean, like, Jade, are you going to take your chances with people trying to kill you or a homeless guy?
Josh, his first two options were my first two options was post on Craigslist, but I would have posted anywhere, like social media, whatever. Dude,
I'd be more terrified of someone who would respond to me on Craigslist than some homeless guy on the street.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah. I would. Yeah. For fucking sure. Yeah. I would definitely pay a homeless person. But also I will say the Maddie thing I called so quick. I knew that from the moment she answered the ad, I was like, that's not real.
Yes.
Because I was like, the loopholes would cancel each other out. If they were both being hunted.
Thank you, Jade.
And they were together.
That was my first thought. I was like, couldn't they just murder them both? And that was like, okay, we need more clarification here. Mm-hmm. We need more clarification. If you're in a separate game, do different rules apply? Like in terms of, so are only certain hunters allowed to kill you and only other hunters allowed to kill the other person? And if so, the rule would apply because you could both be together and the rule would apply because you have two.
But it's supposed to be bystander. That's the point. Is like you don't want to get anyone else involved. But if it's the two people being hunted, then that's just a two for one.
And I thought what was going to happen, what was going to happen is that he was going to wake up and she was going to be dead. That's what I thought was going to happen.
So my thing about it was like, I knew either she was faking or I thought this is a long con and she's a hunter.
Jade, we should have watched this together because that was, I thought there were three scenarios here that I thought were going to happen and none of them came up. Like, I did think like, oh, maybe she is faking. And I was like, no, but maybe it's going to be more interesting than that. Like, maybe she's a hunter. So maybe he's going to wake up and like, almost be dead, you know, or like she's
going to try to kill him after like fucking with him.
Or what I thought most likely, because after a while and they were talking, I was like, okay, I don't think she's a hunter anymore, but like maybe they're not thinking through this clearly, and that them being together just means, like you said, two for one. And he's going to wake up. When that production assistant showed up in that one scene, I was like, oh, he's going to wake up. He's going to turn over or go through the house, and she's going to be dead. And they're going to try to frame him for the murder of this chick. Mm. And he's going to be like, no, it wasn't me, you know, kind of a thing. And
well, that was like my first giveaway was when she went to go get the water. Because I was like, if she was part of the game, she would have not gotten up to get a water by herself.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no way.
No.
And that's what kind of like first like made me basically question it. But also, what a fucking psychopath. Because I'm sorry, but what woman answers a Craigslist ad from a strange man that says that he's being hunted, and then you buy into it and you make your mom buy into it, and then you allow him to sleep in your bed in your mother's home the first night
you Jade, I don't think you spent enough time, I don't know, like answering women's like Tinder profiles, because let me tell you, from Josh, years past, there is a fine line between attractive and crazy, like absolutely
she
insane.
Said, I don't know, I was just bored. I was like, girl, you could have been murdered.
You are 4 foot like 10, like that was 95 pounds. Like you
that was
are
shocking to me. Shocking. I was, when she was like, I don't know, I thought this was all some sort of like sex game. And I was like,
wow.
And you got your mom involved? That's all I could think.
That's
you know what I mean?
Kind of crazy. I love when she's like, yeah, you have to be in the same bed. Okay.
She's like, and puts the pillow there.
That's the thing that tipped me off. When the mom was doing that, I was like, mom doesn't believe any of this. So what's going on here?
Well, you could kind of think that like maybe her mom is actually just nice, unlike his mom, who was like,
yeah,
you're psycho. And maybe her mom is like, okay, she believes this, so I'm just gonna pretend with her. But regardless, that was fucking nuts to me. Yeah. But okay. I called it.
Do we have to talk about best performance? Because I think this is Jake Johnson's movie. Is there someone that you think did better?
No.
Yeah.
Also, he was in like 90%
of the movie.
So whereas people came in and out. Yeah.
And he was great. I think he gave a great performance. I want to take anything away from him. I think he knew the character he wanted. He wrote for that. And he played this perfect, crazy, kind of funny, interesting character, I thought. But Jade, I want to hear some of your quotes, because I can't believe you're the person that writes the quotes. Like, I depend on you for these. And I wrote down like 7 or 8, to be honest. So I got to hear, what's one of your favorite quotes from this movie?
All right. This one's kind of the beginning. When Tommy's in the car with Andy Samberg, and Andy goes, sorry, I'm not memorized, so I'm just going to read this off the card. I thought that was great.
I love when actors play themselves, especially people like Andy Samberg. It's so funny to get their interpretation of who they are in real life. Mm-hmm. Like, and Andy Samberg is the perfect person to play himself in a movie. Like, amazing. Yeah. I actually have one about Andy Samberg, and this is when Jake Johnson is trying to explain to his family that, like, Andy Samberg picked him up and what the game's all about. And he goes,
oh, yeah.
So I think it was his brother-in-law. He goes, so you're saying Andy Samberg drove you? No, I didn't say that. I didn't say he drove. He had a chauffeur. And I was like,
the semantics. I would have been the same way. I've been like,
I did not say he drove. He had a chauffeur.
My God. This one was pretty funny, because at the point when I wasn't sure if we should believe Tommy or not, I thought this was absolutely fucking hilarious. So this is when he finds his first like camera, and he's on the phone with his mom, and his mom is like, you're holding a piece of rat shit and pretending it's a tiny camera. Put it down and wash your hands. It's full of diseases.
I love just like the little one-liners from the mom. Like the one that got me was, again, I think this is where it was the scene where he's explaining to them all like what the game is and all this stuff. And he looks at his mom and he's like, mom, you believe me, right? And she goes, not even a little bit.
Yeah. not even. His mom roasted him so much.
So much.
Yeah. I love this, because also what was not helping Tommy's case is the fucking way he was describing things were just so insane. Like, he called all the production assistant people ninjas. So of course he's describing ninjas doing stuff, but they're not even ninjas. They're just PAs. But this is when like the PA first introduces himself to Tommy. And then Tommy's like, are you a ninja? And he goes, a production assistant. Yeah. think he fully understood what Tommy meant.
I think this is when I didn't write down the context for this quote, but I'm pretty sure this is when he's meeting with the game makers the first time. And he says something to the effect, and this is Tommy as Jake Johnson. He goes, "This has to be better, right? This has to get better." And he, and they're like, not necessarily. No,
yeah.
not necessarily. No. And they're like, "Wait, just so I understand, there are people trying to murder me." And he's like, "Yes, very much so. Very much so." It's just that little interaction between him and the game makers where he's just like, "So really?" And they're like, yeah, that's exactly how this is going to go down. Yeah.
Oh my God. This is like towards the end. And then this quote specifically is why I think Jake Johnson should have gone in one particular direction. So this is when he's at the bus stop with the cowboy assassin. And the cowboy says, "Have you figured it out yet? That this whole game has been set up by you, all that Michael Jackson shit, you and your dad playing video games and your ex with Ellen DeGeneres." Mm-hmm. And then Tommy goes, "So then who are you?" And he goes, "I think you watched too many Westerns, huh?" So like that quote to me signified that this was all in his head. But then the ending acts like it's not. The only other thing I can think of is that because they said that they had watched him for a long time, is that they watched him and then based all of their hunter personas on him, which is fine. That makes sense. But this conversation in particular, though, I felt like to me should have been the click of, oh, this is all in his head.
That was my number two. That conversation was my number two indicator of like, this is in his head. They are telling us point blank now that this is in his head.
Same.
Also, I want to bring up one more line because this line was missed, I feel like, and it could have been the line of the movie. And I just don't feel like it was emphasized enough. I think they should have done three or four more takes of this. And this was Natalie Morales. And she had a couple other lines in her monologue where she's talking to him on the porch that I think were very, very good and well delivered. I think this could have been the quote of the movie had they thought about the inflection more of this line. And because I had to rewind it because I was like, did I just hear that? Like, this is really well written, but I just don't think hit the way they wanted it to. And she goes, she's talking to him about the relationship and about what she thinks the problem is with him. And she goes, "It's like you're so afraid of feeling that you're already dead." And I was like, holy shit. Like that should have been like the fucking tagline of the whole goddamn movie. Like
that is the whole
essentially
point of the film, which I think you and I are on the same page, at least of like where the film should have been. Mm-hmm. I do think it should have ended with it not being real. It should have been a little bit darker take, and it should have been more to the point of him discovering, like breaking this pattern and coming off of like who he is.
And I think had they explored that more, I think this would have been in more film festivals, and this would have been like a grand jury selection or something we would have heard about coming out of a couple of these festivals, because it would have been one of those indie darling films, I think. And I think because he didn't do that, it's just going to be one of those films that disappears.
I did read some trivia, and it said that because this premiered at, I think it was South by Southwest. Southwest.
Yeah.
And he said that he got great feedback from the audience and everything. But after watching it there, it wasn't quite the reaction that he wanted. Like, it wasn't enough. And he had made edits to the film before it actually premiered. So it was technically already produced, filmed, went out for festivals. Mm. And then he made edits to it before it went to streaming on Hulu.
Interesting. I'd love to see an original cut of this.
Same, because I almost think that what we wanted from the film was what he put out at South by Southwest. And I wonder if he changed it to get more general audiences on board.
That would be disappointing. That would be really disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, Jade, I need to ask, where do you rate this film?
I mean, this is a shelf. For me, I think it was good enough to not be trash. I think there's a lot of quality redeeming things about it. I do like the theming of it. I do like kind of the messaging and the underlying kind of story. I just, again, my biggest critique is I felt like I wanted more from what it was giving, and it wasn't giving enough to be a gem for me.
See, even with this critiques, like even with us talking about this, I still think this is a gem for me. Like I will probably watch this film again with my wife. Like, and Look, there's plenty of films. That. There's plenty of films that we watch where I'd be like, let's not waste our time. Let's find, I'll watch a rom-com. I'll watch fucking anything else you want to watch. Like, let's not do this. This was a film where I watched it by myself and I was like, oh, like, I think my wife would like this. I think I'd probably watch this again with her, knowing that I'd already seen it, knowing what I know about the film, even with its flaws. I think it's still interesting. And to me, this is probably to date one of the better Jake Johnson indie films that I've seen. So I hope that this is a springboard for him to do more things and, you know, get that Oscar nom or get into those festivals.
Absolutely. And do something a little and more maybe edgy. Don't change your film after the fact.
100%. Keep going.
Just
never, never apologize.
Go with your original vision. Exactly.
Be Tarantino. You know, like, you know, what's always funny. Tarantino is such a dick about so many things, but one of the best quotes I heard from Tarantino is someone asked him about director's cuts one time and he goes, yeah, I don't do those because I fucking cut my film the right way the first time. And I was like,
you know what?
Amen.
This was a quote we used a lot when I was getting my creative writing degree, and it's kill your babies.
Yeah.
And it's a big one because you hold on to things so much and you think things are so precious, right? And so they're your babies, but you can't hold on to everything. Everything is not good. So you have to kill your babies. Like, and I think that's one of them is like, when you produce your final thing, like that is it. Like, don't change it because you want to put one of your babies back in.
Yep.
Kill your baby. Like, you know, as dark as that saying is, but there's a reason for it.
The only director that's ever allowed to do a director's cut is Peter Jackson. And it has to be specifically for The Lord of the Rings, because that is one of the few, I will defend that forever, because that's one of the few films that he shot that with the intent of making them that long. And the only reason they were that short is because the studio said, we can't fucking do that. Like,
the only director's cut, at least that comes to mind, that I think is actually really good was for The Descent. And I really enjoyed that because there's two versions, one where she escapes and then one where she thinks she escapes, but it was all in her mind because she had like hit her head and then she wakes back up. And then it's a matter of, will she or won't she? And then like the film ends.
Oh, interesting.
And I enjoy both. I enjoy the satisfying ending of her escaping and the other one of like the audience is left to not know.
Yeah. Let's go fuck yourself. Well, anyway, that was our review of Self-Reliance. You know, I think based on a recommendation, probably go watch it. It's streaming now on Hulu.
It's worth it. Yeah.
You will have 30 days to survive. You will only be killed when you are alone.
So let me get this straight. You cannot touch me if I'm with someone, and then I get $1 million.
What are you doing?
What are you doing, man? Why'd you leave my side?
I had to take a shit.
Why didn't you wake me up and bring me with you?
Because I'm taking a shit.
Let's play.
And once again, our movie this week was Self-Reliance, directed, written, and starring Jake Johnson. It's streaming now on Hulu. You might have to, depending on where you're located, use maybe a VPN to show that you're in a different location to see that movie, but we're not going to talk about that. Solid movie. Go see it. But Jade, next week we were debating back and forth on what to watch and what to do, but you know what we haven't done this year, and we're pushing this and continuing on this podcast into the future, and we can't go against tradition, which we've established now for our third season. We're going to be talking about what, Jade?
The Trashies.
So excited. We are already pushing some nominations here based on films that we watched, that we loved, and that we fucking forgot that we even watched in the first place.
Yeah,
it's unreal, some of the things that we've watched. And you know, Jade, looking at our list, I do think, based on award nominations and just us putting together our Trashies list, I don't think Hollywood had a very strong 2023 overall.
No, it was interesting because when I was looking back at all the movies I watched for 2023, it was just not as strong as 2022. And the more I looked through, the more I was like, only a handful stood out to me. The rest I was like, ugh, like take it or leave it.
And honestly, I don't think 24 is getting any better. I think we're going to end up with a bunch of foreign films in the awards categories and or just mediocre films based on the writers and the acting strike that we had. And, you know, so many films getting pushed off into later in 24 and even some into 25 or even 26.
Yeah, I agree. Interesting to see what this year holds. But Yeah, we'll be talking about some things such as, you know, best overall movie, actor, drama, worst actress and actor, dumpster fire films, you know, all the good and the greats, as well as TV shows. So come back next week.
The trashiest show, which I think is and
it's movie, our favorite category.
Our favorite category. Actually, I was already looking at some of these and I was like, be great. We're going to share all of this with you next week. We're really excited to talk about the films that we've watched and which ones were great. Maybe, Jade, we should even see if maybe some of the ratings we gave are under or over deserved, or maybe that's for another episode, but
yes,
we'll see what next week brings. Anyway, Jade, where can folks find us between now and next week?
You guys can follow us on all of our socials. We are on Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram as Our Taste is Trash. You can also find us on our website, ourtasteistrash.com.
Come back next week for the third annual Trashies. We'll see you then.
To get ourselves a treat.